Leonard, alcoholic. Oh, my God. Thanks for being here. I got 20 minutes. I think I can do this in 18 minutes. The hard part's going to be the $5 bet I got on whether I can... Oh, my. You can't hear me? I can. The $5 I'm trying to win on not swearing and not breaking the traditions. So if I screw up, let me know. I'm going to try hard. I got some notes because, first of all, I got my favorite quote of all times. And it says, "The most expensive mistake you can make in your life is to pay attention to the wrong people." All my life, before I got here, I was paying attention to the wrong people. They were telling me, "Leonard, you don't need high school. Go to get a job, get a car, you get a girl, then you get what you want in the back seat of the movie theater." And I was going, yeah, that's what I want. And then I didn't get an education, I didn't go to high school, I got what I wanted in the back seat of the movie theater. And then I was drunk and was in a blackout and got arrested and just kept going. And it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And it was a bad move. Then I got sober and the same thing happened. Exact same thing happened. I was listening to the wrong people in AA. You know what I mean? And it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I was listening to the wrong people. They weren't reading the right books and they were telling me the wrong things. But there were some right people that were telling me, "Read the black words." And I would go, "What does that mean?" So if you haven't read the black words, I went to kindergarten. We have a basic text. I forget what the name of it is. Does anybody know? Oh, that's right. Basic text. When I was in kindergarten, I had this basic text. It was "See Dick and Jane Run." Anybody read that in kindergarten? Yeah. And then I read it, and I learned, and I went to first grade, and then they gave me another book. In the second grade, they gave me another book. Third grade, they gave me a different book. Fifth grade, they gave me a different book. Eighth grade, they gave me a different book. And then that was it for me, eighth grade. I didn't go to high school. But I did pretty good in life. I had a pretty good career. Now I'm retired on disability, and this is my last international, my seventh one in a row. I'm moving to the Philippines, and I've done pretty good in my life. And on an eighth grade education, because I listened to the right people in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor, Barry, is here tonight from Nashville, 49 years of continuous sobriety. And he's not the least bit perturbed because they raised the age to 50. And if you believe that, no, I'm just kidding, Barry, I love you. And my friends, Mike and Mary C. from Nashville, those people are real AA people. At 11 years of sobriety, I almost died from a serious medical problem, and they took me into their house, and they fed me, and they let me sleep in their house, and they took me to meetings for 6 months until I figured out what was wrong with me. They didn't tell me, "Read the books, do the steps, you're fucking up." I score. I just lost $5. Because there were people in AA telling me, "You're not working the steps, you're not reading the books, you're missing it." They're real AA people. I thank God for them every day. Because they knew what they were doing. Barry is the best 12-stepper I've ever seen. He'll take a guy for breakfast at 7 o'clock. New guy. Take him to an 8 o'clock meeting. Take him on some errands. He's a salesman. Take him to a noon meeting. Take him to lunch for a hamburger. Take him on some more errands. Find out about the guy. What do you do? Where do you live? Got any brothers and sisters? Take him to a 5:30 meeting. Take him to dinner. And the guy's like, "Where are we going next?" "Well, we're going to go for coffee and donuts with the rest of the people." Then the guy's going, "Like, I'm tired, you know." "Well, Barry," I'll go, "well, where are you sleeping?" "I don't have any place to sleep." "Well, I got a sofa. You want to come over to my house?" "Well, can I?" And the guy's like, 9:30, he's sleeping on Barry's sofa in his basement. But he's sober. And Barry will do it again the next day. And pretty soon the guy's sober. Very few people can do that. But Barry can do that. That's why he's sober 49 years. I couldn't do that because I was working, making money. in the car business. When I got sober, the old guys used to say, you know what, you're so full of baloney, you should be selling cars. And I would say, what has that got to do with anything? They said, don't worry, just go get a car job selling cars. And in 1987, when I was 3 years sober, I was the number one salesman of the year for Chevrolet Motor Division of General Motors for the entire world. Out of 360,000 salesmen for Chevrolet. And 3 years later, I was promoted to finance manager at the largest Chevrolet dealership in the world, Brown & Brown Chevrolet, in Mesa, Arizona, at the largest Chevrolet dealer in the world. That's why I get more Social Security on disability than anybody at my age at 47. And the people in the Philippines Bank are going, wait a minute. We got thousands of people here in their 60s and 70s getting $1,200 and $1,400 a month. How come you're 56 years old getting $2,000 a month? Something ain't right here. I said, well, I paid a lot in, and my employers matched it 100%. So God's been pretty good to me. Because the old guy, when I got sober, was 80 years old, never paid into Social Security because he was a Broadway actor. And he told me every day, Leonard, quit waiting tables and go get a job paying Social Security. And I was 25 years old, and I said, 67, what do I need? He said, Leonard. And they told me, listen to the old timer. So I went and got a job selling cars, paying Social Security taxes, because I listened to the old timers. So the basic bottom line is that I don't want to talk too much more about myself. I want to talk about a gentleman who knows more about gratitude and love and service than anybody I ever heard. I never met the guy. He's been extinct for a lot of years. How much more time do I got? His name is Poor Boy Rice. Some of you may have heard of him. He died in the late 80s. I used to have his cassette tapes that I paid $2 a piece for in Mesa, Arizona. He's a black gentleman born in the early 1900s, the very early 1900s. He's been extinct for many years. I've got a CD of his that a friend of mine named Kathy Y. in Albuquerque found somehow at some obscure tape company called mountainrecordings.com. This is a talk from Midwinter Conference in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, in January of 1986. It's the exact cassette tape that I kept in every one of my houses and cars and trucks. And when I was feeling lousy, I played it. When I was feeling pretty good, I played it. And when I was feeling outstanding, I played it. Every single day for 10 years. Because no matter how I was feeling when I played it, I felt 10 times better. So if you're new here or old here, if you like to feel good like I do, you can buy this tape for $7 plus shipping at this company. If you got newcomers or friends or relatives in the program, I'm a satisfied customer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I highly suggest you buy it. And if you're not a satisfied customer after you listen to it, if you don't have a spiritual awakening after you hear it, I'll give you a guarantee, a Sears and Roebuck guarantee. If you're not satisfied, look me up at the Easy Does It Group in Mesa, Arizona. And if I'm in the Philippines by then and you can find me, I will give you a double your money back guarantee, write you a check plus shipping and handling, and mail it to you in a personal check. You follow me? His name is Poor Boy Rice from Conyers, Georgia. Stone Mountain Group, which is pretty close to here, was his home group. He died many, many years ago, because what happened was when he died in the late 80s and the cassette tapes went away and CDs came out, he disappeared. I couldn't find him for 20-something years. And all of a sudden, the CDs, I want to bring him back to life. I want to resurrect him and bring him back to his place in Alcoholics Anonymous that he so deserves, because he knows more about gratitude, love, service than I'll ever know possible to share with you and the people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous. So buy this tape. Burn CDs. Give them to your friends and relatives. But don't ever expect to get it back, because I never ever got one back from anybody. Because when they listen to it, you'll have to break into their house to steal it back. You understand what I'm saying? So the basic bottom line is that I want to talk a little bit about sponsors. Do I have any time left? 10 minutes? Holy cow. I could do this in 15 minutes. We got a pamphlet. AA General Service Conference Approved Literature. I believe in it with all my heart. It's after that book. What's the name of that book? Blue Book? Anybody know? We got a lot of people in my home group that come up to me and say, Leonard, the book, I haven't read it in over 20 years, and that's the God's honest truth. I got it here, a third edition. I keep it on my coffee table for a reason. I'll tell you in a little bit why. Because I use a fourth edition, because some reason they changed the stories between the third edition and the fourth edition. But this pamphlet, Questions and Answers on Sponsorship, before I sponsor anybody, if they don't read this pamphlet, I say, get in somebody else. There's a section on page 13 and 14 in here that says, what does a sponsor do and not do? And I go over it with them like 7 or 8 times. There's 18 bullets under this caption on these two pages. The most important one, I believe, says, tries to give the newcomer some picture of the scope of AA beyond the group and directs attention to AA literature about the history of the fellowship. The three legacies. Anybody know what the three legacies are? Yeah? Well, most of the people I know don't have a clue what they are. The service structure. Anybody know what that is? Most of the people I know don't have a clue what that is. And they're sponsoring people. The worldwide availability of AA. Anybody know what that is? Wherever the newcomer may go. Now, here's what I see in AA. I'm your new sponsor. We're going to work the steps. You're going to do what I say. You're going to call me every day. We're going to start today. Blah, 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 blah. You got a guy 5, 10 years sober, 15 years sober, 20 years sober. Doesn't belong to a home group. Doesn't go to group business meetings. Doesn't hold a group position. Doesn't do any area service. Never done any area service. Blah, 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 blah. Never been to an international convention. Blah, blah, blah. And he's sponsoring people. Well, wait a minute. The three legacies. You know what they are? No. You know what a delegate is? No. What's a delegate? Do you know what a delegate does or where they meet or what they do when they meet it in New York every year? No. Anybody know what a delegate is here? Yeah. Anybody know how many of them there are in the United States and Canada? Yeah. There's 93 of them. Do you know what they do in New York? Anybody? Beautiful. We can give her a donut or something. 99% of the people I know don't. When I got sober, the first day, somebody said, there's a Sober Way Out group. They're having a business meeting today. I said, what's that? They said, just go in there. There's one position open. So they shoved me in there, and somebody said, I elect Leonard. I nominate Leonard, alternate general service rep. Somebody said, Leonard, you're... I said, what's that? And an old lady said, I'm your new service sponsor, Leonard. And I said, what's that? She said, don't worry, I got a car. And every month she picked me up and took me to the Miami International Airport for a district general service meeting. And at 6 months sober, the GSR moved, and I was the GSR. And at 1 year sober, I was elected district committee member for District 10 of the South Florida area. And then somebody elected me, nominated me for archives chairman. And then I was setting up the archives for District 10 South Florida area, and I was going to area assemblies for South Florida area. And I knew what a delegate was. For the first 3 years of my sobriety, I knew what all this was. And I never missed a district general service meeting. I never missed an area assembly for the first 3. So I pretty much know what it is. So when people come up to me at my home group and they go, Leonard, you're missing this on this page. You don't know what you're talking about. I say, you know what a delegate is? No, what is it? Do you know what contempt prior to investigation is? Everlasting ignorance. Anybody ever hear that? Here's what I do. Works every time if you're in that position. They got these things called cell phones. I go, oh, I got a call. Oh, I got to take it. Oh, how you doing? I get away from them as fast as I can. Okay? We got a lot of people in my home group. I take medication because I have a thyroid problem. It's called hypothyroidism. I don't get enough serotonin. I don't know what a thyroid is. I don't know what serotonin is, but I got it. And if I don't take the medication, these guys know what happens. People get machine guns and they go into movie theaters and kill people. That's why I'm on disability. It's the truth, unfortunately. But when I'm on the medication, no problem, Leonard. I don't understand any of it, so I keep taking my medication. So a lot of people in my home group say, you need more medication, Leonard. My psychiatrist says, Leonard, you're maxed out. And if I give you any more, they're going to put me in jail because I'm a psychiatrist and I can't give you any more medication. They'll put me in jail. So I just do what the doctor says because they told me get outside help. So I get outside help and I do what he says. Because if you listen to what people in AA are telling you about outside help and about people that aren't, because we have some people where I'm at that say, if you're on medication, you're not really sober. You're not really a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous because their sobriety is a little bit more superior to yours. If you listen to those people, they'll kill you. I've watched them kill people by saying, get off those psych meds. Let me tell you something. They kill people. So I want to tell you this. Here, I got two more minutes, I think. We got this book. What's the name of it again? Oh, yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Now, nobody was sober more than 4 years in the first 100 people. Nobody. They didn't have the 12 and 12. They didn't have traditions. They didn't have a... They didn't have anything. They didn't have international conventions. They didn't have nothing. But they knew they had something going on. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that the relationship with him is capitalized, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults. Anybody got any faults here? I got one or two, believe it or not. I know it's hard to believe. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. That's we are and us's. And there's me, myself, and I's. I was a me, myself, and I all my life before I got here. Give freely what you find and join us again. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Here are some undisputed facts. I have today 11,474 days of uninterrupted sobriety. I've been to at least 18,000 meetings in a row. I cannot name this book because it's an outside issue. This is the part that I don't want to break the traditions at. And I can't say what the book says. But some of you have been to grade school and you might know what the book is. But I can tell you what page to reference. So I don't break the traditions. Does everybody know what work means? They will always materialize the promises if we work for them. Everybody see these badges? Seven international conventions? It's work. If you're willing to go to any lengths, I borrowed money. I put my truck up. I took loans out. I did whatever I had to do. The work is, and the page is, Matthew chapter 20. 1 through 16. That's not breaking the traditions. That's not the name of the book, and it's not quoting what it says. So if you're smart enough to figure out what the book is, and you can go see what it reads, I'm not breaking the traditions. And if you're one of those people, I got a minute and a half left, who likes to come up and say, Leonard, you need to read this book because you haven't read it for 20 years. I keep it on my coffee table just in case somebody comes up to me and says, Leonard, come on, read the book. You're lost. I keep it because a guy came up to me a month ago and said, 2 months ago, you don't know what it says on page 91. I said, oh, you know what it says? He said, yeah. I said, well, let me ask you a question. On page 91, how many words are on that page? He said, well, I don't know. Why would I know that? I said, well, I know. He said, well, how many are on there? I said, 296 words on page 91. He said, well, how do you know that? I said, because I counted them. He said, you're full of baloney. I said, really? I said, well, how many words are on page 1? Do you know that? He said, no. I said, well, I know. There's 206. How about on page 164? He said, I don't know. I said, there's 236. He said, how do you know that? I said, because I counted them. He said, are you telling me you counted every word on every page in the big book? I said, yeah, just the first 164 pages. I'm grateful to be here today. I'm grateful you're all here. Oh, I went 16 seconds over. I'm sorry. God bless every one of you.
Thank you, Leonard. Our next speaker is Christy H., and she's from Ohio.
Hello, everybody. My name's Christy H., and I'm an alcoholic. And a lot of my friends call me Kay, so if you hear that, don't be confused. I'm from Athens, Ohio, and I have some friends in the audience, thank goodness. I have lots of friends. Must be what a sold-out show is like, standing room only. My sobriety date is July 23rd, 2001, and I am currently, shortly coming up on an anniversary, and I am currently serving as delegate for Area 53 of Central and Southeast Ohio. So I got to go to the New York conference this year, and that's a lot of gratitude with that position for sure. I'm going to share with you a little bit about my journey to embody gratitude and my attitude. And if you walk away from anything today from my speech, I hope that you can see that I have a lot of gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. And I'll never be able to repay back what I've been given. It has been a process. You know, it's something that started out small and has grown to, you know, pretty much encompass 24 hours of my day, every day. I have noticed that, you know, the longer we're sober, the more, the easier it is to have gratitude in our attitude because we see more. We meet more people and we see more. We get through one more day sober. And I notice you're, I'm more leaky as I get sober. I leak a lot. Tears just come out of my eyes, you know, things. And, you know, just a word or a, you know, like your opening today, that was very sweet. You know, let's have some gratitude for the 80 years, the recovery 80 years before us. So my process, when I was 16 years old, and this was just a couple months before I started drinking, I was, well, let me back up one second. I did not have the best childhood. I grew up very poor in a very violent home. We moved around a whole bunch, and there wasn't a whole lot to be grateful for. But I was born one of those people that the glass is half full. And I really tried to make the best of everything, and mainly because I had three younger siblings, you know, that I really felt like I needed to help out. And the high school that I had just moved to, I had got involved in activities because it was easier than being at home, right? And I was voted the Optimist Youth of the Year by the Optimist Club. And mind you, this was like a month or two before I got sober, and I want to read to you that creed because they gave, I don't remember anything I got except this little creed card, and I kept it, and I still have it. And I read it, and it really got me through a lot, even when I started drinking. But it says to promise yourself, to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind, to talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet, to make all your friends feel there's something in them, to look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true, to think only of the best, to work only for the best, and to expect only the best. To be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as you are about your own. To forget the mistakes of the past and press on to the greater achievements of the future. To wear a cheerful countenance at all times and give every living creature you meet a smile. To give so much time to the improvement of yourself that you have no time to criticize others. to be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. And that really came at a good time in my life. You know, I mean, it was I just had no structure and no stability. And so I held on to that card, but I started drinking a couple months after I got that award. And within a couple years, I was in a violent alcoholic relationship. A couple years after that, my youngest brother died in a house fire. A couple years after that, that violent alcoholic relationship ended, and it was worse than the actual relationship. And I can tell you, after 17 years of drinking, there was absolutely nothing in my attitude that was grateful. I would meet strangers, and I would talk to them. And, I mean, more than one person would say, they're like, you know, where's your faith? And I would think to myself, what does that have to do with anything? And there would be a cuss word before that statement in my mind. And, I mean, I just was as hopeless could get. And really without, you know, the sun could have risen the next day and I would have not been surprised. I mean, I was just really, there was nothing optimistic about my attitude by the time that I was rendered sober. And what had happened to me was that I came to a place in my life where, you know, on the day that I had a moment of clarity about my drinking, I really felt like I was out of options. I mean, I was at the end of the road, and that night or the next day, my life was going to be over. And I feel that, you know, God, that I didn't believe in at the time, gave me an option. And I could either continue, I could die an alcoholic death or choose to live a spiritual life. And that moment of clarity came to me when I was in a room. I was sitting in front of a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that person gave me the hope that I could do recovery and that I would do great in recovery. And so I came into AA, and the first thing I saw at my first AA meeting was that beautiful sign we have, at least in Ohio anyway, that says, hope is found here, take it with you. And I have that sign, or a copy of it anyway, in my home office. And, you know, that was one of the most beautiful, welcoming messages I got in AA, and was the first one that I got. One of the very first things one of my very first lessons in gratitude was I had a very stressful job when I got sober. I feel like I'm leaning way over. I had a very stressful job, and I went to meetings every day, thank goodness, when I got sober. And I was grousing about my job or my employees or whatever, and there was an old-timer there, and I would say what a terrible day I had. And he goes, well, did you have a drink today? And I said, well, no. And he's like, well, then you had a good day, didn't you? And really from that moment forward, the priorities of my life took on, I had different priorities from that day forward, right? Because if I and my friend Amy is smiling because she knows who I'm talking about, you know, no matter what, if I stayed sober that day, it was a good day. And really, my life has revolved around that principle ever since. I mean, no matter what happens, if I can stay sober, I've had a good day. Because at my alcoholism took me to the place that I couldn't go a day without drinking. And I was lucky if I could go 12 hours without drinking. And for me to have, and really by the time I quit drinking, the only time I had sober was when I was in jail. And I spent too much in jail before getting sober. And the rest of it was drinking. I couldn't not drink. I couldn't even wait till 6 o'clock in the afternoon. So for me to get through a day or a week or a month without drinking was pretty huge. one of the first things I heard after that was make a gratitude list. You know, and in early recovery, when my head was racing, gosh, my head was just a mess when I came in, when I got sober, make a gratitude list. And where things were getting anxious, I would think to myself, you know, I would think, well, I'm grateful for, you know, I'm grateful for my feet, my legs, and my eyes, and I'm grateful for my brother and my sister, and I'm grateful that I have a roof over my head and food in my refrigerator and a job to go to. And I would just list everything that I was grateful for until I calmed down. And, you know, I have been blessed with a certain amount of intelligence, and I can look around and see that there's plenty to be grateful for. Life is unfair, you know, and truthfully, I mostly benefited from that fact. You know, I have had some hardships, but I also some people have it much worse than myself, and I always am aware of that. One of the next lessons that I learned in gratitude was soon after getting sober, I went to Founders Day in Akron, Ohio. And a lot of people where I'm from go to Founders Day, but I realize that lots of you here may not be able to go to that. And on Sunday morning, there's a motorcade to Dr. Bob's gravesite, and there's a memorial service. And they don't do it at the gravesite anymore, but back then they did. And there's always moments of silence. And the first one I went to, you know, there's thousands of bikers there, thousands of people. And you could cut the gratitude with a knife. I mean, you could close your eyes and you could feel the gratitude in that cemetery. And it really made an impression upon me because, you know, just like for me, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous saved their lives. I mean, it saved our lives. And, you know, just like, you know, a shipwreck, you know, I was rescued. And I am grateful for that. I am absolutely grateful for that. I went to, a couple years after that, I went to a meeting at the General Service Office in New York. They have a Friday morning, it's 11:30. They have a regular AA meeting that if the staff members are there, they go to that. And the particular day I was there, there was a Spanish contingent there, and none of them spoke English, and the rest of us didn't speak Spanish. However, we have a GSO staff member that speaks Spanish, and so it was a bilingual meeting, and I never understood a word that the people were saying, but I could understand what they were saying. I mean, even though I didn't understand their words, I understood what they were saying, and that's the language of the heart that Bill talks about. You know, that's what we speak, you know, and you'll meet plenty of people here today that will speak that you may not understand their language, but you understand what they're saying. We also have, where I live, we have an African-American gentleman who, he's in his 70s, and he spent 40 years of his life in prison, and he's really grumpy and very moody. I don't want to cross him, and I have gotten on his bad side once or twice and been sorry about that, but he doesn't say much at meetings. He comes to a lot of meetings, probably a meeting every day, and he doesn't always share, but he always shares when the topic is gratitude. And when the topic is gratitude, when somebody brings that up, he lights up like a Christmas tree. And he talks about how grateful he is for you. And he will do it. I mean, you could bring it up every day for 6 months in a row, and he would light up like a Christmas tree every day, 6 months in a row. And so what I'm trying to say is I learned how to be grateful by example. I mean, other people have shown me how to be grateful. And that's what I try to do when I get up in the morning is I try to show other people how to be grateful. Because there's always things to be grateful for. I mean, you can, you know, not just in Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, you could do a Google search on poverty in this world. And, you know, there are lots of people that don't have roofs over their head or foods to put in their belly or any of those things. Even in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are countries, Cuba, for example, they don't have a lot of big books. I mean, they pretty much have one big book per meeting, and they each borrow it and take it home, and they take turns. You know, they don't have all the meetings that we get to go to or all the literature. They don't have access to that. So how am I doing? 14 minutes? Sweet. So I got this really great card, and it's a picture of a gentleman who's, you know, has some physical and mental disabilities, and he has a basket of potatoes, and it says, "The grateful receiver bears a plentiful harvest." And I have that on my desk, and you know what that means is that if I'm grateful for what I have, then I have plenty. A grateful receiver bears a plentiful harvest. As with gratitude, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. So the more gratitude you have, the more gratitude you'll have. Another saying that goes along with this is, as we sow, so shall we reap. You know, if I sow gratitude, I will reap gratitude. Some things I do to stay grateful is I stay present. I try to stay in the present moment. And in the beginning, when I didn't know what that meant, I would just become conscious of where I'm at. You know, okay, the grass below me is green, and the sky is blue, and the wall is brown. I mean, I would just try to come focus on the present moment, because one thing I've learned in recovery is this present moment is always okay. I mean, it is always okay right now. Even in the midst of chaos, right now is generally okay. You know, maybe if I'm going down on a plane one day, that present moment won't be fine, but, you know, I'm not there yet, and I probably may never be. So I stay in the present moment, and I also practice the presence of God wherever I'm at. And it's really easy to do at the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And it's really easy to do in an AA meeting, but I always try to practice the presence of God, to practice the presence that God is here right now with me. When I first got sober, my head was, you know, going a million miles a minute. I would read meditation books, and I've learned a lot from gratitude by reading, and I'm grateful that I am inclined that way. I have some sponsees that won't read. I mean, even if you bash them on the head, they won't read. And I don't know how to help them, because I got a lot of help from reading books out there. But it would take me an hour and a half to come from a raging alcoholic to a recovering alcoholic. And I found that, you know, I would get my car and I would go to work and I wouldn't put God in the car with me. You know, and so I went through that process where now I try to practice the presence of God even when I'm out in the country all by myself. You know, and that's become easy to do too. So, you know, I've come to know that there are really just two emotions, love or fear. And I either have love or I have fear. I have love, or everything else is a call for love. You know, if someone is being angry with me, it's a call for love. And if I answer that moment with love, you know, I'm answering the call of gratitude. I'm being grateful for what I've been given and what I've been shown. And I can never put enough words. I mean, everything I have, I've been given by members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, the love that I have been given in AA, you know, I never knew it existed when I was growing up. I never knew. And I will always be grateful for that. I'm going to share with you. Oh, I'm doing good. I'm going to share with you. I read Emmett Fox, which was, you know, he's a lot of his writings you see in the 12 and 12, and even in the big book. He spoke in New York when AA was getting started. But I read it's called Around the Year with Emmett Fox, and it's one of the best spiritual books that I've come across. But the May 25th one says, if the glory of God comes first with you, and to express his will becomes the rule of your life, your whole body or embodiment will be full of light. And that speaks to gratitude for me, that my whole body or embodiment is full of light. Not heat, which is what I used to carry, but light. Be full of light. So one of my favorite things about gratitude that Bill shared is that, you know, we come in fear and pain. We come into AA in fear and pain, and we get to stay with gratitude and tolerance. And always remember that. Again, I'm extremely grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and to all of you. I hope you have a wonderful conference. I'll see all of you at the big meeting tonight, which is a truly amazing experience. And thank you.
Thank you, Christy. I woke up this morning and I thought, I am not full of gratitude at all. It was raining and I just did not feel it. But, you know, going to an AA meeting and listening, and that wasn't always what I was good at, but listening, it brings me back to where I was, and I can remember it wasn't so good. And I know today I have tons to be grateful for, so thank you. And then we have our friend Calvin from South Africa up next.
Thank you. If you'll indulge, before I introduce myself, I need clarity whether I should be here at all. I traveled 20,000 kilometers to get here and cost me a lot of money. But I'm not sure that I should be here. I mean, do you know anybody else who's only been drunk three times and are an alcoholic? I've only been drunk three times in my life, once from 1964 to 1969, and then from 1970 to 1978, and then the last time from 1979 to the 23rd of August, 1985. And that is my sobriety date, and my name is Calvin, and I'm an alcoholic. Seems like you had the crybabies first and last. In 1990, I was in Seattle, being 5 years sober, and an older chap, I shouldn't say that anymore, but an older chap read the fifth chapter at the opening ceremony in the Silver Dome. And it looked like he had just found Shakespeare. It was amazing. And just before we left for the conference, a young man said, do we have to read chapter 5 at every meeting? I said, we have to read it. You don't have to listen. I said, and you can go out and get drunk, and when you're finished and you come back, we'll still be reading it. I may not be here, but somebody be here reading it. So I didn't even know his name. And for 25 years, I have quoted him, I've spoken about him, I've told people about this gratitude after 30 years. And I remember saying to God then, can I do that when I'm 30 years? And today I'm speaking, and in August I'm 30 years. So, great. I could tell my story in three words. It was crap. I got desperate and walked through them doors. And now it's great. And that's my story. But a lot of the stuff that goes around it, the stuff I've learned, the stuff I'm grateful for, the people I've met, the life I'm living today. In 1985, I was given 6 months to live if I didn't stop drinking. So I've had 29 and a half years, what we call in South Africa, pansela, which means extra time and a gift. I think it would be unfair of me not to start this by saying, Viva Mandela. Are these mine? I'm grateful to be alive for the last 29 and a half years. Which have been given to me as a gift. I'm grateful to be sober, and I'm grateful for a good life. The good life that I've been living for the last couple of 10,950 days. One day at a time, because it was so bad, when a youngster comes in a meeting and they all say, you know how long he's been sober? And I chip in, I say, yes, since 4 o'clock this morning. Yeah. And that's how long I've been sober now, because I had to speak today, so I've been awake since 4 o'clock. An old timer once warned me about becoming complacent with my sobriety. I have stories in my life where I nearly fell down a mine shaft. And that experience, I remember when I look into a glass, I see the pit, the 7,000 feet, the certain death. And every time I look into a glass, thank God not to drink it, I see that shaft that I nearly fell into. And I'll mention his name later, but a person said, when I wake up or I talk to somebody and I say, of course I'm sober, I'm heading for trouble. It's, thank God I'm sober. It could be very different. There's no guarantees for tomorrow or for the next 5 years, for the next convention. There are no guarantees for me. I forget your name. The lady said that she, when I came to AA at 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, of course it's ridiculous, we always drank on Friday afternoons. At 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon in a, as Bill sees it, small town meeting in Cape Town on the sixth floor of commercial house, which was our AA office. My decision was to shut up for 3 months and to stay sober until 6 o'clock that night. Because if I thought of it longer than that, I don't think I would have made it. And I'm grateful that I made it for those 6 hours. And at 6 o'clock that night, or 7 o'clock that night, I decided I'll try it until 12 o'clock. And then hopefully go to bed early and and be okay in the morning. I bought liters and liters and liters of cool drink and tasty things, because I'm a taste thrift. Just whiskey and ginger ale was my poison. Lots of it. Not the ginger ale, lots of the other stuff. I never drank any of it. God was really good to me. I had no DTs. I was drinking a bottle and a half of scotch a day and a liter of ginger ale. And I had no DTs. I haven't had a relapse yet. I never went to a rehab. When I walked into that meeting after two double scotches and ginger ale at the pub two blocks down to give me courage to go to an AA meeting, I thought they didn't notice, but I'm sure they could smell me when I walked in. Say, you can't fool an alcoholic. Not with the booze, anyway. And I was expecting these prickly beards and baggy pants and a bunch of drunks. But the only drunk in the room was the guy with the pinstripe suit, tie, JCI, Junior Chamber of Commerce, I don't know what you call them here, we called them JCs, President's Badge, International Training Director, great business going, all that stuff, all that crap really, because I was a drunk in a pinstripe suit, and I needed help desperately. Then I started going to Cape Town One. Some of you might know there's another Cape Town in somewhere in California, in the capital of California. It's called Cape Town 2. And now there's Cape Town 3 as well in Cape Town. But what I learned from the guys there was that I had to... Everybody said, oh, you mustn't have fear. Well, I'm shit scared of the first drink. I'm sorry that I let them down, because I am afraid of the first drink. Because, and I get so many reminders. God has been good to me. He got me here after I asked him 25 years ago. The chap that gave me a lift to the airport on my way here a while back is a pastor, and I sat in his church. And they were singing a chorus, and on the board, the first song said, I can't go back there. I don't want to go back there. And I said, that's my message, my story for the 3rd of July. I don't want to go back there. I can't go back there. I know I've got a lot of drinks in me left if it happened, but I don't have any more sobriety in me. I don't think I'd make it back. That sort of pride wouldn't let me come back and tell you. I sat in a meeting in Rondebosch in Cape Town where a chap, John Belitho, now he's passed, I can give you his name, he was 30 years sober, and at the end of the meeting, so it's my tummy pushing this thing, I'm sorry. At the end of the meeting, John Belitho, 30 years sober, said, "Guys, remember me, I'm one day sober." And I've never forgotten that. It shook me rigid. And I'm now 30 years, and I think, wow. If I had to go back there, it'll be the end. It's a miracle. It's a miracle I'm here today. In December, I didn't have the money. I didn't have the facilities to get here. Although I asked 25 years ago, thought he'd forgotten. Somebody paid my ticket. A contract with the government came off after 4 years. And the money went in the bank. And I think I'm going to get home and there might even be some spare, even at the exchange rate. At 14 rand per dollar. And I've just come from my daughter in London, in England, where it's 20 rand to the pound. So when you've got 40,000 rand in your account in South Africa, you really think you're doing good. And the guy at customs says, "What are you going to do for money when you're over there?" So, my rock bottom came when I went for an insurance policy, a very small one, just to cover some shenanigans that I was busy with. And the doctor examined me, and he got a second opinion, which was concerning. I have never failed a medical in my life. I'm healthy, and black belt in karate and all these things, and I'm really healthy, and I've never failed a medical. And they were umming and hawing and umming and hawing, and the second opinion walked out, and the first opinion said, "If you don't stop drinking, you've got 6 months to live." Well, thanks to him, I'm here telling you about my really short journey in AA, because I do it a day at a time. I'm grateful a day at a time. And if I get into trouble, I've still got 10 minutes, but I can just change the name of the meeting to "My Attitude Towards Gratitude." And my attitude towards my gratitude is that unless I'm grateful, unless I'm mindful of what has been given me as a gift, unless I can share it and give it away so I can get something back, I could get into trouble again. The part that I remember continuously is that I need to share it. I need to give it away. I don't know if you have here, we have a committee or a facility called Bridges, where a rehab facility will phone you if your number's on the list and say, "A guy's getting out today, pick him up, take him to his first meeting." And that's really great. That is a way of sharing the program. But I'm also reminded, I was tempted to tell you that there's been a printing mistake, that I should actually have been speaking tonight. But, you know, we're in AA, so we can't complain. So I'm really happy to be with this bunch of alcoholics. I'm reminded of the preacher who was invited to speak at a nice conference like this, Congress, and did all his homework and got really excited, and he ran up the platform and he gave his prepared talk and nothing happened, sort of like, you know. And it was dead, nothing happened. And so when he walked off, he was shoulders bent and down, and an elderly man down the hall, maybe our friend, would say, "Sonny, if you went up the way you came down, you would have come down the way you went up." And I want to go down just being grateful that we remember that for all the years And all the days that I've been in this program, I've never been shunned. I've never been said no to, except when if I wanted to borrow money or something. But but as far as help was, as far as feeling down and having a cup of coffee and doing it, nobody's ever said no. And that is really great. I know that I think if we took all our drunkologues, even only in this room, and there's a couple of thousand people who were here, and we wrote all our drunkologues down, we'd fill a bigger book than the Encyclopedia Britannica. But I wonder what the same books would look like with our gratitude in, with my gratitude. I, like our friend there, measure my gratitude at the moment. I'm a house father for a rehabilitation center aftercare. So once they've done all the bad stuff and taken all the stuff out of them, they come to me, and then we release them into the street, back into society, once we think they're okay and they're working. And it's been a real wake-up call for me, working with alcoholics, drug abusers, at this time of my life. I don't think it's my calling. I tend to get a bit impatient because it was easy for me. I was desperate enough to get into my program and do what I needed to do. I remember, maybe not with fondness or fondly, that at a time God had turned me into a bum. And that's only because I used to be a drunken bum, and now I'm just a bum. So I'm glad that I'm just a bum today, because if I were a drunken bum, I wouldn't be allowed in the room, much less to come to the podium. It's a miracle that I'm here, and if I have any friends or if we know anybody who doesn't believe in miracles, invite them to an international convention. Because I believe tonight I will see, like I did in Seattle, some 49,000 miracles in one room. And I've remembered that for the 25 years. It is that has carried me through. The gentleman reading the fifth chapter and those people. When I walked into that room in August 85, and expecting these baggy pants and long beards, I sat next to the bank manager of the First National Bank in Cape Town. On this side was a business owner, Keith, who became one of my best friends. Business owner, MBA, brilliant guy. And also was quite scary because the one chap lived in the same block of flats as I. He was a English professor at a university. I was devastated that he saw me at this meeting. I mean, we lived in the same block of flats. Needless to say, he was glad to see me because he knew. He'd seen me in the parking lot. The thing that reminds me of how crazy and how stupid and how ignorant we are, when I'm drinking, is that I can lie on my back in the street. People can walk past and snigger and sneer. And that was okay. But when I went in through the doors of AA, I snuck in. Nobody saw me go in. You know? Have you seen the guys in the prison stand when they're going to get judged? My friend, the guy from the college, was so excited he phoned his mother and said, "Mother, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, "Oh my God, has it come to that?" Yeah. We started early and we're going to end early. There are some people in my life, some I've never met, some I've met on tapes, like Leonard shared with us. Some of them are like Clancy, Father Larry Kowalski, and I've never met them, and I wished I would have when they were around, because they I've listened to those tapes over and over and over and over again. They're still around on my desk, just to remind me that I'm not in this alone. I have to walk my walk. I have to do what I must do, but I'm not alone. I've got many, many friends in Cape Town and now around the world that support me. That's a try and keep me on the straight and narrow. It used to be very windy in the past. And I'm truly grateful for Bill W. and Dr. Bob. I sat next to a Bob in the bus last night, and I asked him if he was, he's an elderly chap, and I said, "Are you Dr. Bob?" He said, "No, not quite." So I thought I just got lucky. And there are people in my life that when I was young and when I was drinking were insignificant and didn't really matter to me, that when I realized what they were doing in my life, how they were influencing me, how their words of wisdom were bringing me closer and closer to where I am today here in this room. I can only be grateful, and my attitude towards my gratitude is growing and growing constantly. I walk around these halls and I just suck it all up. It's just amazing. It's like this, you know, the stuff. Anyway, with all of the help that I've had and all the help that I'm getting, I'm very grateful to be an alcoholic. Because if I wasn't an alcoholic or recognized myself as an alcoholic, I would have been dead. So AA has been great for me. It's worked for me today, and I think I'll try it again tomorrow. Thank you.